Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's Tuesday. We're just getting into the week here. A lot of stuff to talk about. Matt is in the control room, ready to answer your phones. The number is 800-259-9231. The chat room is open. Webcam's coming online right now. We're full tilt boogie rock and roll, ready to just get out there and start working for truth, justice, and what we used to call the American way. I'm your host, Mike Rivero, otherwise known as the Anti-Rush. So if you're tired of hearing about how wonderful and glorious it is to go around the world killing brown people, you tune in around here and we will take care of these things. Now, starting right off, as usual, with the financial news, the Dow Industrial Average kind of flopped around a little bit. It ended 20 points up, no big deal. That's kind of noise factor. The interesting news from that, however, is remember we reported yesterday that Travelers Insurance was going to replace Citigroup in the list of 30 stocks that make up the Dow Industrial Averages. Well, apparently, GM, no big surprise, GM stock is being removed from the Dow list and is going to be replaced with Cisco Systems, which is definitely a very wonderful performing stock. So we're going to see the Dow take another upward leap. It doesn't really represent anything in terms of improvement of the overall economy. It is just they're again changing the list of stocks that they're using to calculate the average. A real number, a real statistic we can look at is that U.S. manufacturing has contracted yet again for the 16th straight month. Okay, so for 16 months, for a year and 4 months, basically since the beginning of 2008, American manufacturing has been contracting every single month, a little smaller, little smaller, little less jobs, little less products. And the bottom line is, I don't care what bookkeeping tricks they're using. I don't care how they reorganize the Dow Industrials. If we as a nation are not making products to sell to other nations, then we are not turning this economy around. I know we keep hearing all this thing about green shoots this and glimmer of hope this and, you know, China really loves us and a vote of confidence and all these other colorful euphemisms. But the bottom line is, if you're not making products to sell, your economy is in deep doo-doo. And that's kind of where we are right now. And that's not going to change until we get those jobs back, until we get the manufacturing back, until we make something. And as I pointed out yesterday, I mean, we're the nation that put men on the moon. And right now, what's the hot product that we're getting ready to export is the puke ray. I mean, that just shows you how far we have fallen, how far we have fallen indeed. Now, we've been talking about how the banks and financial industries, even after all the hundreds of billions, indeed trillions of dollars of your money, because you're on the hook for it, after all that money, how the banks are still having to play bookkeeping games to try and look like they're making money. Because the reality is, they're sitting on the TARP money. They're not using it to make loans. They're canceling credit cards. They're not doing refis. They're not putting the money back out to work. They're basically sitting on it and using it to unwind from their gambling debts, the derivatives. And so for all that money that was put in there, it's not flowing back into our economy at large. Well, if they're not loaning it and they're not getting payments on it, then they're going to look really bad to the stockholders. So the banks are playing these little bookkeeping games to try and make it look like they're earning a lot more money than they really are. And we talked before about mark-to-market, which basically allowed the banks to take these toxic assets and decide for themselves what they're really worth. And, you know, and it doesn't mean they're able to go out and sell them for these prices. Just they're saying, well, we really think this asset should be worth whatever number they put on there. And then they put that number that they just came up with, put it on the balance sheet as an asset, and all of a sudden, they're starting to look a lot better than they did before. And it's funny bookkeeping. It's just a scam. Now there's a new ruse. We have it under that name on whatreallyhappened.com, where the banks are taking their toxic assets. And again, they're playing revaluation games on them to actually value them at one level and then claim they're earning money on them at a somewhat inflated level in order to, again, take the little bit of cash flow they've got coming in and make it look like it is a much higher rate of return. So, and yes, it's all legal. They're not committing any crimes technically. It's all legally allowable. Last September, along with all the taxpayer money they were giving to the banks, the government relaxed the accounting rules for these financial industries. They're allowed to play these little funny games. You aren't. You're not allowed to use these kind of bookkeeping tricks on your home finances or your tax returns or anything. You know, it's a straight accrual accounting system for you. But all these other very creative, mark-to-market, and so forth and so on, the big banking corporations and Wall Street, they're allowed to use that, and they do use it to make themselves look better on paper than they really might be. And, of course, inevitably, this will affect their stock price. And, again, it's kind of an illusion because we're not making products. We're not bringing back the jobs. And you can't have a truly healthy economy just by moving the money around in circles and changing the rules by which it's counted so you can count it two and three times. If you want a healthy economy, you got to make products for sale. That is the bottom line. We don't have that. Now, turning over to one of my favorite stories, Swindler's List, and the ongoing saga of Bernie Madoff. Now, to bring you up to date, Bernie Madoff made off with $65 billion in an investment scam, a pyramid scheme. The Securities and Exchange Commission, even though Harry Markopoulos had come into them with evidence wrapped up in a package with a big bow on top saying Bernie Madoff is doing something wrong, it's now come out everybody on the inside of New York's financial system knew that Bernie was doing this. And nobody said anything. Nobody reported it. The SEC wasn't investigating it. Two of the SEC's own lawyers are now under investigation for having engaged in insider trading using information they were getting from observing Bernie Madoff's operation closely. So after all of that, $65 billion, and then a couple of months ago, they basically said, well, we're really not going to be able to claw back the money from Bernie's original investors who made a lot of money before it all fell apart. And these institutions included a lot of pro-Israel lobbying organizations who took the money and they ran it through AIPAC to basically buy the U.S. Congress out from you and I. And they said, well, we can't really do the clawbacks. It's too complicated. They made their money. They thought they were doing the right thing, and it was, they were not aware they were committing a crime, which I rather doubt, but there will be no clawbacks. So now the Internal Revenue Service and the state of New York have agreed that all of the people who lost money on Bernie Madoff's schemes are going to be allowed to deduct it from their income taxes as theft losses, and no cap. They can basically carry this forward and use it to not pay taxes for the next several years. And so here's the bottom line. Bernie stole $65 billion. He shared it out with his friends. The losses are being dumped on the taxpayers. That is the bottom line of this situation. The poor are always made to pay for all. Going to be no clawbacks. Nobody's going to lose anything. You know, Bernie's going to go to jail for a little while. Maybe. We'll see. And the people who made money off of his little Ponzi scheme, they get to keep it. And that includes all the U.S. Congress critters who ran their campaigns and won their congressional seats using money that derived from a fraud. I mean, they should be prosecuted under the RICO statutes. But they're not. They're absolutely not. Anyway, so moving right along here. Now, over the last couple of days, I was talking about the concept of odious debt, and it triggered a lot of email. Most of it was very, very positive. I got one email basically saying that odious debt is no longer a valid concept. It's a waste of time talking about it, and basically chastising me for rooting for the United States to fail. And I want to be very, very, very clear here. I am not rooting for the United States to fail. What I would be rooting for is for the United States to come back as it was, as we thought it was, before the great disillusionment we've already been through. I'm certainly rooting for corruption and fraud and criminality and the torturers to fail. If you're not, there's something wrong with you. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsor.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking about odious debt again. I'm talking about this one very critical email basically saying I shouldn't be rooting for the United States to fail. And I wanted to clarify, in the context of the United States being 300 million American people, teachers, you know, bricklayers, road builders, doctors, that the people who actually make the nation, who actually built it and make things happen in this country, I'm not rooting for them to fail. They're failing anyway. They're being driven into failure by government policy. But I still very much believe in the United States in terms of the people of the United States. I believe in the Constitution. Certainly, I support the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And I'm rooting for them to succeed. I'm rooting for them to prevail. I'm rooting for them to come back and reassert what America is supposed to be. As far as the current federal government, no, I am not rooting for that to succeed. I don't think anybody in good moral conscience can. We have a government which has proven to have lied us into more than a few wars. We have a government that has been torturing people, including children, in front of their parents, and lied to us about that. Remember when George Bush was saying the United States does not torture, even as we now understand they were. Back in 2003, they were talking about how Iraq had to be invaded because they had weapons of mass destruction. They had aided in 9/11, and they were linked to Al-Qaeda. We now know there were no weapons of mass destruction. It was a lie. And we have George Bush on videotape admitting Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11, and just in the last couple of days, Dick Cheney has finally admitted there were no links between Iraq and 9/11. So that means the entire war in Iraq rested on a single confession extracted under torture claiming that Iraq was aiding Al-Qaeda. And we can't talk to that guy anymore because he was rather conveniently suicided. So this is the reality of our government. They lie, cheat, steal. We have no idea what, if anything, they've ever told us is the truth. 16th Amendment ratified? I don't know. We'd be silly to assume it's true just because the government says so. I mean, it's just, when you live in an age of lies, when you know you live under a government that lies to you, you have no way of knowing what the truth is, either within the country or without. And that is the real danger. And here's the bottom line. And this relates to contract law. And this is going to get us back to odious debt. Any agreements made between the government and the people when the government is known to be lying are basically null and void. No court of law will enforce a contract entered into fraudulently or by coercion. If we're being lied to, if we have been lied to by the U.S. government, then any commitments we, the people, made to that government to support them, back them, pay for the bills, they're null and void. They're gone. We have no more obligations to the government once the government is shown to have lied to us. And that is the bottom line. Now, this gets us back to the odious debt issue. I had an email that came in that said basically it's a non-issue. It's no longer considered valid, blah, 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 blah. We are hearing now that apparently on April 14th, 2008, there was a meeting of 40 financial participants, World Bank, IMF, Paris Club, all those top money bank people. And it was hosted by the World Bank. And basically it was this roundtable discussion, April 14th, 2008, in which they talked about this very subject, odious debts. So they're already aware this is an issue. Let me rephrase that. When the federal government of the United States collapses, we, the American people, have a legal right under international law to repudiate. To repudiate all the debts incurred by the government of the United States that led to wars of aggression, that led to paying for all the security apparatus to keep us under control, to repress us, to strengthen the government's position. All of these are recognized as odious debts. And it has been done before. The United States, on behalf of Cuba, oddly enough, repudiated all of Cuba's debts incurred under Spanish occupation because the Spanish government had incurred those debts not for the benefit of the Cuban people, but to build forts and weapons and armaments and to make war and to secure and strengthen its own position. Now, the reason this odious debts concept exists was to discourage the world's financial institutions from investing in tyrants and dictatorships. They still do it anyway. But the idea is there's a risk there. And that is that if you're loaning money to a dictator and they're using it to be a dictator and they fall, that because the people of that country didn't have a choice in the matter, it represents a contract under coercion and is no longer enforceable. The debt can be enforced against the individual tyrant. For example, before he passed away, after Ferdinand Marcos was driven from the Philippines, any financial institutions holding markers for the Philippines would have had to go to Ferdinand Marcos himself directly, rather than the new government of the Philippines, because of how Ferdinand Marcos spent the money. So, this is a valid issue. The World Bank is already addressing it. They held this roundtable in just about a year ago, a little more than a year ago. So they're already talking about it. They're already trying to figure out some way they can get around it. I have absolutely no doubt they already have a bunch of pet politicians lined up where, in the event the U.S. government collapses, these politicians will step forward and try and convince you, the American people, that we are honor-bound to underwrite the debts of the previous government. It is a load of manure. And the first politician who steps up and says that you have any kind of a moral obligation to pay the war debts of the preceding government, you give that politician a good thick coat of tar and feathers and send them on their way, as they richly deserve. So, this is a real issue. The World Bank is already realizing that there's a lot of money on the line here, certainly in the United States. A significant portion of that $65 trillion it's estimated the federal government is in debt for represents money spent on wars of aggression, which we, the American people, did not support. It's spent on building up huge stores of weapons and stockpiles, which, being the world's superpower, we really didn't need. And certainly it is for all this money for TV cameras and security systems and body scanners and all this other stuff, whose only purpose is to keep us under control, under surveillance, dominated, afraid to stand up and speak out against the dictatorship that we find ourselves living in. So, keep that concept in mind, odious debt, because when the government of the United States falls, it's going to become a key issue to the American people freeing themselves from the chains that have been placed on us by the U.S. government. Now, getting back to Dick Cheney finally actually admitting that there never was any evidence linking Iraq and 9/11. And how important is it? Well, it's important because if you go back to 9/11 itself, and in the immediate aftermath, everybody was saying, we're going to go after Iraq, we're going to go after Iraq, find a reason, we're going to link this to Iraq, we're going to go for it. They wanted to hit Iraq, 9/11 was the excuse, but it wasn't Iraq guilt. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network. Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha,
call
America.
Right now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
I'm sorry, Mr. Announcer Guy. I don't know why I keep doing that. It's a mental block. Anyway, listen, we're back here to the show. We're talking about Dick Cheney's admission. No news to anybody other than that Dick Cheney is himself saying this. There was never any evidence linking Iraq and 9/11. Do you remember back in 2003 and even 2002 when they were just trying to crank up wars everywhere? We're gonna get the people who did 9/11, and we're gonna get Saddam, and we're gonna do this and we're gonna do that. It was all a lie. It was all a lie. And I understand why Barack Obama wants the torture scandal to go away. It isn't going to. I'm not going to let it go away. But he wants it to go away because at the core of all of it, behind all the rapes, behind the sodomizing children and making parents watch it, behind the disfiguring of Binyam Mohammed's genitalia with a razor blade, behind all of that stuff, is this, the crime of all crimes. The entire invasion of Iraq was justified on a single confession extracted under torture. There was never a good reason never a valid reason, never a justified reason for the United States to invade Iraq. They just wanted to go ahead and do it. And they did it. 9/11 was the convenient excuse. How lucky for them that 9/11 came along just exactly when they needed it to justify the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq. And by the way, for those of you who are not aware of this, back in 2001, in spring of 2001, March and April, when we, the American people, were getting nothing but Gary Condit and Chandra Levy thrown at us by the corporate media all day long, the United States government, in March and April of 2001, was already informing other governments around the world that we were going to invade Afghanistan in October of 2001, because the Taliban and this consortium of oil companies led by UNOCAL had not been able to reach a deal for a pipeline right-of-way. And this consortium of oil company executives had gone before Congress and said, we can't get our pipeline until we have a new government in Afghanistan. And therefore, we need regime change so we can get our oil and gas out of the Caspian Basin down to the new shipping terminal on the Indian Ocean. One of the members of that oil company consortium before Congress was Hamid Karzai, who is, amazingly enough, now the current installed president of Afghanistan. So these other countries and around the world already knew that the U.S. was going to invade Afghanistan in October of 2001. 9/11 happened exactly when the U.S. government needed the American people to be angered to the point of supporting what was otherwise an unprovoked war of aggression to invade somebody else's territory. And now we're finding out there was no valid reason for going into Iraq. It, too, was an unprovoked war of aggression. The same thing with Pakistan. The same thing with Somalia. Now they're cranking up for Iran. You know, Israel's behind the U.S. government with a whip saying, attack them, attack now, go kill them, go attack now. Just flogging our government to send your kids over to Iran to engage in yet another unjustified war of aggression. We are the bad guys in all of these wars, people. We're the invaders. We're the ones who are just coming up with the flimsy excuses to invade other people's country and steal it from them. The United States government has done to Iraq exactly what Adolf Hitler did to Poland. Ginned up a phony terror attack and used it to justify invading somebody else's country. There is no difference whatsoever in the methodologies between George Bush and his invasion of Iraq and Adolf Hitler and his invasion of Poland. It's the same exact method. So if you ask me whether or not I'm rooting for the present U.S. government to fail, yes, I am. If I'd been alive when Hitler was in power, I'd be rooting for him to fall down, go boom, bounce several times. Because what is being done in the name of the people of the United States of America is evil. Absolutely. And there's two other things you need to keep in mind about this. Because I get a lot of emails from people saying, well, yeah, maybe it was wrong to start the war, but we're in it now and we've got to back the country, my country, right or wrong. You know, and we're in it, we cannot quit without dishonor and all this other crap. But you need to keep something in mind. If you go back to Sun Tzu and The Art of War, the army that wins, ultimately, is the army that believes it has the moral law on its side. And we've lost that. We don't have it. We know the wars are based on lies by our political leaders. Our soldiers know that, too. That's one of the reasons for the very high suicide rates. And the other point is, and this is true throughout the entire 20th century, every major war of the 20th century was lost by the side that started it. And who is starting all these wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and Pakistan and Somalia and drooling over Iran and saber-rattling with North Korea? We're starting all the wars. The United States of America, the U.S. government is starting all these wars, and they're lying to do it. Our economy is already hovering on the edge of collapse. We've got all these wars going on. We are staring massive defeat right in the face. And it is not treasonous or seditious to say we are making a mistake by following this government off the edge of a cliff. We absolutely are. So anyway, getting back to Dick Cheney admitting there never was any evidence linking Iraq and 9/11, it is time for us to confront the reality of what this nation and what this government has done. They lied us into a war. There is no greater crime a government can commit against their own people than lying that country into a war. And why Barack Obama is not correcting the crime by ending the war immediately, well, he's an accessory, obviously. He's an accessory after the fact. He's complicit in a war started with lies. And so at this particular point, when there are war crimes trials, probably at The Hague, Congress won't do anything, when the war crimes trials crank up at The Hague, Barack Obama's going to be standing there right along with Don Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney and George Bush, as far as I'm concerned. Now, of course, Dick Cheney's been running around saying, we saved lives and we thwarted terror attacks and, you know, he's playing Jack Bauer. You know, we stopped the bomb, you know, going off in the city because we tortured the guy into telling us where it was. Milton Beardman, former Central Intelligence Agency Pakistan station chief, who served at the agency for 3 decades, has gone public saying claims that the Bush administration's so-called enhanced interrogation techniques saved American lives are false. There were no terror attacks that were thwarted. We had a lot of false alarms. Remember those days where the terror level was raised up to feckless orange or unhappy purple or whatever color code they were doing at the top, and they'd say, we have credible information of a terror attack on something and something. And it didn't happen. And we find out later on what happened is they had some guy strapped to a waterboard, and they kept dumping the water on him and say, when's the next terror attack? Until the guy just made up whatever came to the top of his mind to stop the torture. And they declare a torture alert on the basis, a terror alert on the basis of this confession extracted under torture. And then, of course, it turned out to be a complete fantasy. And nothing would happen. And people began to say, what is going on with this situation? What was going on is they were torturing confessions out of people and then acting like this torture, these tortured confessions had to be true. And they never were. And we've got to look back over the last several years of what happened. And we've got to deal with it. We can't bury it. We can't slip it under the rug. It's not going to go away. It is a cancer on the entire United States government. And it's not going away anytime soon. This is a mark that this government will carry until they are no more. We're going to take a break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors. Join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We'll be right back.
Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the final segment of our show today, and I just want to finish up on this situation. Dick Cheney, along with everything else that he's going on, about how he's the hero of the nation, and he saved us all from those nasty terrorists who had nuclear bombs hidden in the cities, and he saved us all by torturing children, and all these other little fantasies he's got in his head. Now he's come out with this idea that if Guantanamo is going to be closed, that they should simply execute all the prisoners they have still down there. Just line them up against a wall and shoot them. Or maybe he'll just take them quail hunting or something like that. But the idea is they're trying to sell this idea that these are the worst of the worst, that these are horrible criminals down there, but for some reason they can't take them through the regular court system and put them in the penitentiaries. Okay? Their justification for having tortured these people and kept them in prison all this time is these are the worst of the terrorists. Oh, they're horrible people. We can't let them into the regular prison system and all the rest of it. Okay. What's obviously really going on is that these people who are still stuck in Guantanamo may not be guilty of anything at all other than very bad luck. We know for a fact that many of the people arrested and sent to Guantanamo or to these other rendition prisons were absolutely innocent. They were simply kidnapped at random and sold to the American forces for the reward money. And went out and they just find some cab driver and they whack him over the head and they take him to the Americans and say, oh yes, this is one real bad Al-Qaeda. Give us our money and you can have him. And they give him the money and the guy wakes up and he's in Guantanamo. And they torture the guy into confessing something and they say, see, we've got the worst of the worst. He's a horrible, you know, terrorist here. He's confessed to blowing up the Hindenburg. And so the reality is that those people who are still in Guantanamo, they're not a danger to the nation. They're not a threat. They're not terrorists. They're an embarrassment. Because if they're allowed to go free, as they should be, if they haven't done anything that we can take them through the court and prosecute them and convict them of, if there's no evidence they've actually done anything wrong, they should be released. But the instant they are, like Binyan Mohammed, they're going to start talking to the press about how they've been treated and just how it is they wound up in Guantanamo. And it's just going to hammer home to the world and the American people that a lot of these victims who got tortured to death or who got sodomized in front of their parents or worse, sliced up with a razor blade, hadn't really done anything wrong at all. Right now, George Bush and Dick Cheney are basing their entire moral defense on the idea that, well, these were bad people and they had it coming. It was okay to torture them because they were the bad people. And if they can't prosecute them, then they have to let them go. And it starts becoming more and more obvious that these torture victims are really innocent of any wrongdoing. It's the pressure for war crimes trials at The Hague, because we know the Congress won't do anything. But war crimes trials at The Hague, the pressure for that is just going to grow and grow and grow, and it's not going to go away. And up to a point, Obama is going to have to stop backing and protecting Bush and Cheney because he's got a deteriorating economy and a very angry American population. And at some point, to save his own situation, Barack Obama will gladly toss Bush and Cheney to the war crimes wolves. It's going to happen. And so Dick Cheney is saying, you know, the best way to make sure, and it's already happening, the guy that was tortured into confessing that there was a link from Al-Qaeda to Iraq has been suicided. Now we're getting word today another one of the inmates at Guantanamo was suicided. I'll bet you we're going to see a rash of these really depressed people being suicided in the coming weeks. The ones who've been tortured the worst, the ones whose bodies show the most scars, will never be allowed out of there alive. They'll be suicided, there'll be tragic accidents, they'll be shot while trying to escape, whatever. This is what's going on. Those prisoners on Guantanamo are not a threat to the nation, they are a threat to Dick Cheney and George Bush themselves, because they are the living evidence of war crimes. And that's what's going on. Like I said, maybe Dick Cheney will just take them all quail hunting, solve his problems that way. Now, turning back over to Iran, and, you know, Israel's just out there, Iran's this and Iran's that, and you've got to stomp them and go kill them. Now, amazingly enough, Barack Obama has publicly suggested that Iran may have a right to nuclear energy, as long as it can prove that its aspirations are peaceful. Now, Obama isn't really doing anything that is not already a reality because of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. The United States has signed this treaty. Iran has signed this treaty. Under this treaty, Iran has a right to build nuclear power stations and the fuel rods for them. And under that treaty, Iran has to allow the International Atomic Energy Agency in to inspect what they're doing to make sure it is a peaceful power station. And Iran is doing that. So Obama is merely acknowledging Iran's legal rights under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. There is one more provision that I would like somebody to tell President Obama about, and that is under Article 4 of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, the United States is obligated to help Iran build its power station, which obviously would put the U.S. in a position to know for a fact that it is just a power station. If we have American engineers over there pouring the foundations and welding the pipes and helping to put the thing together, then there is no question of a clandestine covert weapons laboratory underneath the facility, the way Israel has underneath Dimona. So Obama is acknowledging the NNPT. I already know that Israel is going to be very upset with him for this and say, what are you doing saying that Iran has a right to peaceful nuclear power? Which it does. The United States has already acknowledged that by signing the treaty. But Obama is basically acknowledging that. And again, under Article 4, we're supposed to be in there helping them do it, and it would be the absolute best way possible to make sure that their nuclear reactor is just a power station and nothing else. And we should be doing that. So I do have to applaud Obama on this one, because coming out and saying this is definitely something that Israel did not want to have happen. Now, balancing that out, of course, Barack Obama is cutting funds for alternative energy research. For all of his talk about global warming this and environmental that and everything, he is cutting the budgets by about 25%, one quarter of the budget for research into wave and tidal energy projects. You know how everybody hates those big windmills that are up in the air and you can see them and they're killing the birds going by, and everybody says they're an eyesore and there's this huge political stink about this wind power farm they're trying to build off the coast of Martha's Vineyard, and everybody's upset that it's going to ruin the beautiful view of the ocean. Okay, well, if you live near the ocean, put the energy generation underneath the surface of the water where you don't have to look at it. And you have tidal energy generating power. It's hardly a new idea. It's been done for quite a while. And you get electrical generation. You don't get the big turbines up in the air. Why aren't we doing this? Why are we cutting funds for this at a time when we're supposed to be so concerned about the environment? Well, I'll tell you, because the global warming cult is all about raising taxes and exerting control over your life. It is not really about making a better world and a world where some of our energy is from renewable resources and not petroleum products, because if that were truly the commitment, Obama would not be cutting funding for wave and tidal energy research, because that is very promising, as promising as wind power, definitely as promising as wind power. And I don't know, maybe he just figured, because he blew the wad on his date out in New York with the wife. And I guess that cost about $100,000, which the taxpayers paid for, by the way. Now, speaking of taxpayers paying for stuff, apparently Barack Obama now has a quarter of a million contractors in Iraq and Afghanistan. These are contractors with guns. In other words, these are mercenaries. If you want to know where all the money is going in this country, because nobody wants to talk about a draft and suffer the political consequences from it, they are hiring professional mercenaries to go into these other countries that we have no business being in and kill people. We're still killing brown people. And we've got to stop. We can't afford to do this any longer. All right, that's it for our show today. We'll be back tomorrow night at 5 p.m. here on the Genesis Communication Network. Until tomorrow, stay safe, be well, hug your loved ones, drive carefully, and aloha, America.